Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
From the Society for Nautical Research, in partnership with Lloyd's Register Foundation, I'm Sam Willis, and this is the Mariner's Mirror podcast, the world's number one podcast dedicated to all of maritime history.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Mariner's Mirror podcast. You might be expecting Sam, but for the next few episodes, I'm going to be taking the reins. My name is Cecilia Rose, and I'm going to be interviewing women who are working in a number of ways to raise awareness of the work of women in maritime history. This is all part of a really exciting project called Rewriting Women into Maritime History, run by the Lloyd's Register Foundation. And this aims to bring leading maritime organisations together to change our perceptions of the historical role of women in the industry over the centuries. One of the key aims of this project is to empower women by reframing the narrative of a predominantly masculine industry and by promoting opportunities to encourage more women into the sector. So to find out more about all of this, I spoke with Helen Doe, a maritime historian and author who has published extensively on maritime subjects, including the role of women in the industry. I hope you enjoy listening to her as much as I enjoyed talking with her. So without further ado, here's Helen. Helen, thank you for joining me today. I was wondering if you could firstly tell us about this really exciting Rewriting Women into Maritime History project and why we need it.
Well, it was originated and really driven and led by Lloyd's Register Foundation. And they have come up with this idea of finding out more about women in maritime history, but connecting it with today and looking at today's roles for women. And so showing women and encouraging women to join the maritime industry, which traditionally has been seen as a very male-dominated one. So we're really trying to show that, hey, everybody, it's not that male-dominated and actually hasn't been in the past. There are some surprising numbers of women involved, both on land and at sea, in all sorts of different roles. I mean, today there's an incredible range of opportunities. So it's a really exciting project, and I was delighted to be asked to help out with it.
Brilliant. And your work in particular definitely champions women in maritime history. I was wondering if you could tell us a bit more about that and how yourself and your work fits into it.
Well, it began, I suppose, with my PhD, which was about business women in the 19th century. And when I began that, really there was, well, I started looking around at the literature and couldn't find anything very much about women, entrepreneurial women. You could find a lot about women in sort of small roles, or women as victims sometimes, and women dressing up as occasionally find the women cross-dressing, but they were very few and far between. And there didn't seem to be any women who were kind of leading the way in taking decisions and running things. And that's what I was interested in. So literally when I began, there was I think my supervisor at the time was rather sceptical I might find anything. I mean, his view, he said, you might find diaries and things. You know, I never found one diary in my whole time. I think these women were far too busy running things to write diaries as well.
Definitely. And that PhD then became one of your most successful books, Enterprising Women and Shipping in the 19th Century. I was wondering if you could tell us a bit more about that book and give us an example of an enterprising woman in shipping in the 19th century?
Well, the book covers, I suppose, two aspects. One is it looks at ship owners. And you might kind of think, well, ship owners are just people who have shares in ships. Well, a ship owner under maritime law is rather more involved with the business of the ship than that. If you're a share owner in a limited company, you, apart from the kind of AGM, you don't have very much power. Whereas in shipping, each ship had a maximum of 32 owners, and those owners had real power. They were the board of directors. And so I found a large number of women, 12% of all shipping in the 19th century was owned by women.
Wow.
Which is a not insignificant number. And that's the ones I could find, because the challenge with researching women is because they get married, they then disappear. So things become, you know, end up in their husband's name. So it may be their money. So that's 12% of the ones I could find. So that's, and then the other thing I would find, each ship then had to have someone who was managing the affairs of the ship, appointing the master, you know, deciding on the business and paying out things and answering to the other owners. And there were quite a few women who did that. So although they might not have been to sea, they were actually running the business of the ship.
Yes. And as you said, because they're just the ones that you could find, it was probably actually more than 12%.
Absolutely. It's just the tip of the iceberg. These are the ones I could identify. So there was the ship owners and the managers of the ship business. But then there's also in the shipping world, you've got the people who build ships, who run sailmaking businesses, foundries, all sorts of, the, you know, any kind of thing you can think of. Women were involved in running those businesses. And I've got some very significant shipbuilding businesses, large ones run by women.
Oh, which ones?
Well, a couple of my absolute favourites are from the Napoleonic Wars. And we have Mrs. Frances Barnard, who her husband died and her two sons were under 21. And the business went into her name and she ran it for 25 years. In her own name. And even when her sons joined her, she still was in charge. And at one time, she was employing nearly 500 workmen on the Thames.
Wow. So how important do you think these roles were? Could the maritime industry have functioned without women?
Well, how can industries function without women? Full stop.
Very true.
I think they were very important. They were, and the thing that's interesting is they were accepted by everybody they're working with. You know, they not only were, they had male customers, they had male employees. And the thing I found on several occasions was that very often a husband or someone else was supporting them in what they were doing. You know, the husbands left their businesses to their wives because they knew they could run them.
Yeah.
So you find this support carry on all the time. The thing that I find interesting is, was the maritime industry any different? Because you don't find quite so many women running businesses in other industries. And my answer to that is, I think there's two aspects to that. One is that maritime communities, when the men were away, sailing, they might be away for 6 months, a year, and in some cases 2 years if they were whaling. So you've got communities of women who are having to get on and be more independent and take decisions. They don't have a choice. They've got to get on and do that. So I think you've got more independent communities of women on the one hand. But on the other hand, I do have to say that within the maritime industry, because of the way that ship owning is displayed, we can get to the sources more easily. So I think there's some luck there in the sense that in the maritime industry, some of the source material is more readily available. Because I can't believe that women were simply just sitting back and or lying on their reclining on their sofas during the Victorian period.
No. But that's interesting. If they were so involved and there's actually sources that support that, Why do you think it is that women have been largely excluded from the maritime history narrative?
I don't think they've been excluded in that sense. I just don't think anybody's been interested enough to find them until relatively recently. And I found it very interesting. When my book first came out, I had an interesting couple of reviews, and one reviewer said, and this was a male reviewer, I do have to say, said, well, you know, it didn't have enough about the men and putting the women's contribution in context.
What?
Which I found slightly odd, because I thought there's all these other books, maritime books about men, which did not, you could say the opposite. Where were the women?
Exactly. So
I found that a curious, yes, he was referring particularly to the share owning and saying, you know what, I hadn't compared it sufficiently with male shareholding.
Yeah, it's definitely work that needed to be done. And it's quite concerning that other people hadn't looked into it before as well.
There'd been work done on women fishing. And
I see,
The women in fishing. And there'd also been some work done in the US about women at home when their husbands were away whaling, so whaling wives. But that largely assumed that the women were still very dependent. And I found that curious, because when I looked at the sources for that book, the sources were a series of dead letters, you know, they'd lost letters that had been found, where the women were writing to their husbands at sea. Now, and my scepticism on that would say, well, if you're writing to your husband at sea, he's been away for 6 months or more, are you really going to tell him, don't worry, darling, I'm doing absolutely fine without you? I don't need you. I'm running the business far more successfully anyway.
But possibly they were.
Just possibly.
And so how would these women initially get into these industries? Are you finding that they're all from a similar background, a similar class, or is it a complete range of different women who are able to access these industries and these lives?
From the work that I've done in the 19th century, it's been quite a range. And it's largely because they are, and as was typical of the time, if you're part of a community and you've got family interests, you tend to follow that same interest. So if your father was involved, or your brother or husband. And then the thing about researching women, particularly married women, you only find out about them when their husband dies. So if they take over a business, the thing I was looking at, if they take over a business, if the transition is smooth, their husband dies, they take over the business, that's how I've discovered them, because I've suddenly got a woman's name running a business. If that transition is smooth and the business then carries on for a while, that would suggest to me that she's been involved in it beforehand. Because very often women were working hand in hand with their husbands. Women are often doing the finances. That's quite common in several industries. So to me, if that transition is very smooth, there were examples of women who instantly found a man to run the business for them because they didn't want to cope with it. And that's good.
See.
That's fine. But that just highlights all the others who didn't.
Yes. So if they hand it over to another man, you can assume that they perhaps did less alongside their husband.
They just didn't want to be involved in that business.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had one case of a woman who was inherited from her husband, but she quickly handed over part of the business to her son because she made it quite clear she didn't want to be customer facing. So she felt he should do that, but she wanted the more sort of background. But there were other women who were very happy to be very definitely customer facing and some pretty important customers.
So after all of this amazing research, why do you think that these women are still relevant to us today, and what can we learn from them now?
I think it really encourages all of us to keep going and doing the jobs that we want to do. These women were pioneers. They didn't see themselves as pioneers. They just got on and did the job that they had to do in many cases. We've got choice these days, and we've got an incredible choice. And so let's go out there and do all sorts of things, and you know, we may not necessarily be absolutely the first, but there's many ways of doing these.
Yeah, and it's quite inspiring as well that they often did all of this without any recognition, possibly, during their own lifetime, and knowing that really it would be the men that whose legacy continued. But obviously we're hoping to change that.
I think the thing that I always remember is that when great dancers, Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers, Fred Astaire was always the one that was celebrated for his wonderful dancing. But it was Ginger Rogers who said, "I did everything he did, but backwards and in high heels." So when I look at these women from the 19th century and other periods, they're doing the same thing as the men, but very often they're also having to run a household and look after the children at the same time.
I know, it's incredible. Have you found that there's a network between the women? Did they kind of know each other and communicate?
Well, yeah, in the smaller communities, if you consider the 19th century, around Britain and Ireland, a large number of what we would now think as small holiday resorts were thriving port communities, all with their own ships and their own... So these networks are quite small. And so, yes, the women did know each other within these networks.
And are there kind of letters between them that you found?
Not very often, no. Very little correspondence. It's really frustrating. When you do, you pounce on it as an absolutely wonderful piece of information. But that is quite rare, yes.
Well, I suppose if they were in small communities, they would have lived very close to one another and wouldn't have had the need for...
To write to each other, you're right.
Yeah.
No, I think the thing that... they are interesting women, but I think we've also got to be, and that's one of the things I'm finding with this particular project, because we've been inviting people to write in and contact the project with their stories. And one of the things you're finding is there are some myths have grown up about one or two women. And I've recently been involved in a Welsh documentary about a famous bard. Sarah Jane Rees, her bardic name was Llanogwen, and she has been really put forward as the first she-captain, so a certificated master mariner. Well, when you start digging into it, you find she wasn't. And that doesn't do women's history any good. It was a myth that grew up, not that she promoted, but grew up after she died. What she was a really, really good navigation teacher teaching future captains.
Oh, I see.
And so this myth has rather overshadowed her real achievement, which is a pity. And she then went on to become a very famous bard in the Welsh Eisteddfod and a great champion of women's rights. And this is in the 19th century. So she's an amazing woman. But sadly, no, she wasn't a certificated captain.
Oh, interesting. So, returning to the Rewriting Women into Maritime History project, how can our listeners get involved with this and be a part of it?
Well, we'd be delighted. Go to the website. If you just type in Rewriting Women into Maritime History, you'll find the Lloyd's Register Foundation website. We've been inviting everybody and anybody to send in their stories of women in history. We've also got some wonderful interviews now with women, current women in the maritime industry, and a whole series of fantastic photographs of women in the maritime industry. So it's connecting the past and the present. But go to that website and anybody can contribute and we'd be most welcome. Are you fascinated? There must be many, many more stories we've not heard.
Yes, I can imagine. That's really exciting. And have you heard any already so far that have kind of stuck in your mind?
There's quite a few. I mean, the Llanogwen one was fascinating. I just found an amazing woman. And there's another woman in Scotland called Betsy Miller, who was also something of a legend in her own lifetime. She was in the early 19th century. And I'd not really come across her before. And she's another one who was running the business of the ship and everything else. And a really tough and very much admired woman.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. This has been a really fascinating chat and we want to encourage everyone to Google Rewriting Women into Maritime History. If you have anything to contribute or if you just want to engage with the material, spread the word. It's a really exciting project. And thank you to Helen for speaking to us today.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Please be sure to check out our YouTube channel and follow us on social media. And I'll be back soon with some more guests highlighting the roles of women in maritime history. See you later.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Well, something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional unprofessional, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.